noble truth of the cessation of suffering, popularly known as Nibbana in Pali, Nirvana in Sanskrit. This Nibbana, I think we should understand it quite clearly. The reason is there's a lot of confusion or misunderstanding about it. Some people, some group, they equate Nibbana with heaven, okay? Just like in heaven. And some people equate Nibbana with become one with the great creator. And some people equate Nibbana with being one with God. And in some cases, even the Buddhist sects, they have a Western paradise, some sort of a paradise, where it is there where all the Buddhas and Arahats and many others, I don't know what they are, I don't know in details, but it is a paradise. That's Nibbana. Those kind of, a lot of interpretation or understanding or misunderstanding exists. So I'm not arguing with anything, I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with anything, but I like to present it the way how the Theravada Buddhists view Nibbana as, in a form that I understand based on what I heard from my teachers, based on a little bit of my own interpretation that I come about, based on what being taught by my teachers. It is straightforward, logical, one thing's linked to the other. So first of all, we'll just use the word Nibbana. What is this Nibbana? Nibbana is the third noble truth. The noble truth of the cessation of suffering. So to know that, you need to understand the first two noble truths. The first noble truth is noble truth of suffering. So noble truth of suffering is, in a sense, everything in this world and everything in this universe of living beings, which is made up of mind and matter, which is made up of physical phenomenon and mental phenomenon. That world, that whole world is suffering, dukkha. It covers everything. In a more scriptural explanation, the five aggregates is suffering, and you know what the five aggregates is. So suffering exists, do exist in this world of living beings. And number two, the Buddha not only mentioned about the first noble truth, he tried to look for its cause, the roots, the origin. And after he discovered it, he mentioned, he taught us that craving, tanha, okay? Craving, grasping, attachment is the origin of suffering, the second noble truth. Noble truth of the origin of suffering or the cause of suffering. So this craving is the cause and suffering is the effect. And whenever we talk about craving, we should understand there is another mental factor. Craving is a mental factor, one of the mental factors, one of the 52 mental factors. craving is the mental factor. But whenever these kind of mental defilements, all these mental factors, whenever they arise, they don't arise it singularly. They arise with a group of others that are compatible with them. They arise together. But in everything that is arisen, there is one factor called ignorance, avijja. Avijja, ignorance, or popularly called as moha. Okay, delusion, illusion, not knowing, not understanding as it is, not knowing the true nature. That mental factor also arises. So whenever there is a tanha, craving, grasping arises, together that ignorance or moha, avijja, arises together with it. So those are the cause, but immediately the Buddha pointed out as craving. But we should understand that moha or avijja, ignorance, is always arise together. They are the cause and suffering is the effect. Those are the two truths. But Buddha didn't stop there. He investigated farther and he found out there is the end, the cessation, the extinction of suffering. Okay. This suffering, we don't have to keep on suffering all the time, constantly, for eternity. There's an end to it. That end is cessation of suffering. And that cessation of suffering, Buddha called it Nibbana, the noble truth of the cessation, the end, the extinction, the disappearance of suffering. That is Nibbana, and that is the third noble truth. So whenever we talk about this third noble truth, we must clearly understand the first noble truth and the second noble truth, suffering and craving with ignorance. So in here we are talking about this third noble truth, Nibbana, where a lot of people interpret and equate with many different things based on what they know, what they understand, what kind of concept they believe in. They try to equate and show a comparative presentation. But simply, in Buddhist, is what is Nibbana? Nibbana is the cessation of suffering, where all physical and mental suffering ends. Okay? Cease to exist, disappear, uprooted, blown out. That is Nibbana. So let's repeat again, what is Nibbana? Nibbana is the cessation or the extension of suffering. But what is the cause of suffering? The cause of suffering is craving, tanha. So in other words, the extinction of craving, the extinction of craving or tanha, the disappearance of tanha, the abandonment of tanha, the cessation of this craving and grasping is Nibbana. Because this craving causes suffering. When suffering ceases to exist, that is Nibbana. So when craving ceases to exist, that is Nibbana. You can also look at it that way. Cessation of craving is Nibbana. Cessation of suffering is Nibbana. And how do we understand this, what dukkha is, from the first noble truth? From the First Noble Truth, we understand this way, what is dukkha, what is suffering. I won't repeat all of them again, but the final sentence is, the five aggregates of clinging is suffering. The five aggregates of clinging is suffering. So in other words, we can say, the cessation of the extinction of the five aggregates of clinging is Nibbana. We can draw that way. Just like the way we draw craving, the cessation of craving is Nibbana. And here, what is suffering? Suffering is five aggregates. The extinction of five aggregates of clinging is Nibbana. So let's look at what is the five aggregates. Five aggregates is, first and foremost, is rupakhanda. Okay. Rupakhanda is aggregates of matter. In other words, all the physical process, physical phenomenon, all matter that exists in the physical universe. But we are not applying this suffering to every material in the universe. We are applying this material which is composed in a being, in a living being, in your body, in our body, in the body of animals, in the body of insects and bacteria, in the body of celestial being, in the body of Brahman, Brahma. That's specific. Okay. Not every material in the universe is suffering. Only the material that is composed in a living being. Because this Four Noble Truths refer to the world of living beings. We should understand as thus. So in here, aggregates of matter. Okay, that is the first aggregate. So cessation of these five aggregates is Nibbana. So specifically, if we go to cessation of this material aggregate is a part of the process of Nibbana. So what is this material aggregate or matter? Matter. Okay. We already know Buddha taught us that we can divide it into 28 material properties that compose of the matter. But out of that 28, four are the main. What are these four? In a quick sense, earth, wind, fire, and water. So in Nibbana, that's an extension of material phenomenon or material process, the extension of matter, that's Nibbana. So in Nibbana, there is no temperature, no such thing as cold, no such thing as hot. There is no movement, no vibration, no motion. And also, in Nibbana, there is no such thing as hard or soft or a substance. In Nibbana, there is no cohesion and expansion. There is no contraction and no expansion, nor no implosion or no explosion. Nothing as such exists in Nibbana. Because that is the qualities of material property of matter. So as there is no substance, no hardness, no softness, no hot, no cold, okay, no expansion, no contraction, and so on. So basically, that is the reason we say Nibbana is out of this space and time. Because within space, there's a material substance composed of all these qualities. And also space itself is defined by the position of two objects. You can define the space of a room with the one wall and the other wall. Between them, there's a space. Without these two walls, you can't define the space. And now we know extinction or disappearance of all the material qualities is Nibbana. So Nibbana is not within the bounds of space. And if there's not bound of space, there's not bound in terms of time either. That's why Nibbana is out of space and time. That is one way we could understand. We try to understand Nibbana from the Theravada Buddhist point of view. And then the aggregates, let's go back to the aggregates. So first aggregate is aggregates of matter. We have now correlated that with Nibbana. Second one is what? Vedana. Aggregates of feelings. Vedana khanda. Aggregates of feelings and sensations. Which is put in a different way. Pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. That's it. Of course, if you want to define pleasant from the physical source, from the mental source. Unpleasant from the physical source, mental source, and then the neutral feeling or sensation. That is Vedana khanda. In Nibbana, Nibbana is, if you look at it, it is beyond the wall of senses. Beyond the wall of senses. And what are the senses? We know the senses through five physical sources. Through the eyesight, through the ears, sound, through the nose, smell, through the tongue, taste, through the body, touch, and through the mind to the mind and to the wall of Dharma objects. That's how we know. Okay, that's how we. And whenever we got in touch with these six senses, when we investigate with six senses, what happens is feeling arises, Vedana arises. But first of all, if you look at this, we already define Nibbana is beyond the material phenomenon and material process, beyond matter. There is no matter. So there is nothing to be seen or seen by. There is no object to see. No object to hear, no object to smell, taste, touch, or think about. That's why Nibbana is beyond the realm of the senses. In other words, you cannot detect, you cannot identify with pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, and neutral feeling about Nibbana. So it is beyond the senses, beyond space, beyond time, beyond senses. But still it exists. Simply it is the extinction of all sense. Sense objects and sense process and sense phenomenon. Simply put, it is beyond the realm of feelings and sensations. That's number two, aggregate. Number three, perception. Okay. Sanyakhanda. Sanyakhanda, what is this sanyakhanda perception? Perception is you try to cognize a certain marks, a certain characteristics, to know, to identify, to recognize an object. But as there is no more object, whether it is physical or mental, there's nothing to perceive. So that's why Nibbana is the extinction of perception. Nibbana is the extinction of matters. Nibbana is the extinction or lack of sensation. Nibbana is lack of perception. And then what is the fourth aggregate? The fourth aggregate is sankhara khanda, mental formations. We all know too well, there are altogether 52 of them. But Buddha has taught us separately, two separate out of this 52. One is feeling and sensation, vedana. That one is already discussed. Another one is passa. Passa is a contact. Contact is whenever there is a object. Okay? And the senses, one of the senses, and the consciousness come in together at the precise moment. That's called concept. That one is also out. The remaining 50, in general, I quite loosely call it all the emotions, but it is more beyond the emotions, likes and dislikes, hate, love, and so on. Even the good one, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, those are a part of these mental factors. But there's one thing always present, is will, chetana, will, volition, chetana. But anyway, all these things, 50 of them, mental formations, all these mental formations, where do they arise from? They arise from the contact, passa. There must be an object, there must be a tool to be in touch with the object. In other words, form. There must be an eye. And also there must be consciousness. When those three come in together, there's a contact. As there is no more materiality, material objects, no contact can be formed. That's why Nibbana is lack of mental formations. In Pali word is called cetasika. Cetasika, mental formation. So Nibbana has no mental formations or cetasika. And the last one, aggregates of consciousness, vijnana khanda. Okay, vijnana khanda is, what is, in English we just call it consciousness. What is consciousness? Consciousness is the ability to know, a phenomenon of knowing, a process of knowing. To know what? To know an object. Okay. That is consciousness. So to be a consciousness, for a consciousness to arise, there must be an object. Without a physical object, it cannot arise. And in Nibbana, there is no physicality, no objects, no senses, no eyes, no ears, no nose. Those are the ones that create the senses. Those are already lack, lack, lack. So if all the objects and the sensory tools are not there, how can a phenomenon of knowing can know? There's nothing to know, so there is no knowing can exist. In other words, no consciousness exists. These are the five aggregates. Okay. Rupa khanda, matter, vedanakkhandha, senses and feeling, sanyakkhandha, cognition process, marking characteristics, sankharakkhandha, all the bundles of emotions and many, and also vijnanakkhandha, phenomenon of knowing. Those things do not exist in Nibbana. So, cessation of suffering is Nibbana. Cessation of craving is Nibbana. But suffering is the five aggregates. So, cessation of five aggregates is Nibbana. But what is this five aggregates? Five aggregates are the first one. The first one is matter, rupa. We call it just rupa, matter. Okay. That is the part of the physicality or physical phenomenon. But the remaining four, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness, they four of them combined together is called mind. So these five aggregates is what? That is nama and rupa, mind and matter. So if cessation of the five aggregates is Nibbana, then cessation of mind and matter is Nibbana. So mind and matter cease to exist. That cessation is Nibbana. So this is the way we try to approach and understand Nibbana. Okay. Based on what we know, based on what we experience, and based on what we are practicing. We are not trying to pull theory out of a book and then trying to define Nibbana. You all are practicing this mindfulness meditation, and what are we doing? We are always observing nama and rupa, mind and matter. We are always observing the five aggregates of clinging. Okay. Matter, feeling, perception, mental formation, and consciousness. All the time, whenever we are observing, we are observing one of them. And also, we are experiencing the inefficiency of these process and phenomena. The breakdown of these phenomena, the dissolution of these phenomena, the disappearance of these phenomena. In every moment that we are observing, we are experiencing, we are experiencing. So we are not pulling these out of the thin air from a book. We are directly correlating with what we are doing and what we are experiencing. Cessation of mind and matter is Nibbana. And also, we started with one thing, craving. Cessation of craving is Nibbana. And Buddha pointed out craving because that is the immediate cause, proximate cause, because that is not the only cause. In Buddhism, whenever we study something, we always try to identify the proximate cause, immediate cause, what trigger it. This craving, this tanha, this ignorance, avijja, those are mental factors. Those are a part of that 52. So, extinctions of craving, abandonment of craving, extinction of ignorance or avijja. Okay, when you abandon the ignorance, what appear? Wisdom, understanding appear. Disappearance of ignorance is understanding, wisdom, vinaya. That's it. So, this is how we can try to understand this Nibbana. from the actually what we are doing. Now, we can see why the extinction of craving or cessation of craving is Nibbana. And in a larger picture, in more detailed picture, it is the part of the mental formation, Chetasika, the whole group. But if you want to put all together in a neat little package, you can put into three. We all know that word, heard that word all the time, Lobha, Dosa, and Moha. The English translation is greed, anger, and delusion. But you know in details what it means. So extinction or abandonment of mental defilement is Nibbana. But in here, you have to be very, very careful. Three of them, Lobha, Dosa, and Moha. Most of the things we are discussing is about, okay, what you want and what you don't want. That is Lobha and Dosa. Moha is, we never deeply discuss about it. That's why Samatha meditation, when you are in a great higher stage, you can keep these kilesa far away. But one thing was, you can keep this greed or desire wants far away. You can keep these dislike, aversion far away. You can suppress them so that it seems it doesn't exist. But you can never totally eliminate moha, not knowing. In a samatha meditation, concentration meditation, however high you rise, you can go to the highest level, you cannot eliminate moha. Because moha, or ignorance, or not understanding, expand a large spectrum. In a very specific little thing, a project that you are doing, you know in and out. That means you understand thoroughly and properly, you have no moha in that particular little project. Or you know the nature of mind and matter, or you don't know the mind, nature of mind and matter as it really is. When you don't know, that is moha. Delusion, illusion. When you know it, that moha is gone. When the moha is gone, when the ignorance is gone, the wisdom arises, the insight arises. But even in this, knowing is the mind and matter, there are many levels, as you already know. Sometimes it's the, first of all, specific characteristics of these mind and matter. Very unique, specific to each object. Yeah, of course, at that moment you have no moha, at that particular moment. But there are so many objects, and that's why we meditate when we meditate, and every object we observe, so that we know the specific characteristics. In other words, your moha or delusion is gone, your understanding arises about the specific nature of this particular mind and particular matter. Not overall yet, but we practice and we practice and we practice. And that is where the moha is gone. And then, after repeatedly investigating the specific natures of mind and matter, okay, over and over, repeatedly, again and again and again, at a point of maturity, then you begin to understand the general characteristics of mind and matter. Specific characteristic doesn't apply to everything, but general characteristics applies to every living being. Every living being that has the material properties and mental properties. We know everything. Everything has a common characteristics of three things. We all know that. Anicca. Impermanence, constant state of change, flux of change. One characteristic. Dukkha, suffering. And in here, the suffering doesn't apply to all the big ones that we know. Of course, they are already under it, but specifically it applies to the oppression of all these physicality and mentality. Oppression of these by the constant states of breaking down. It's oppressed by the constant state of breaking down. In other words, it shows that it is a totally, entirely unsatisfactory, this system is. And that is dukkha, suffering. Very specific. In other words, the five aggregates is suffering. They are always changing, they are always breaking down. And the third one is anatta. It's called no soul, non-self. No soul, non-self, in a very practical approach, is uncontrollability. You cannot control anything that is the mind or that is matter. There's no control of it. It's because it is always in a state of change, because it is an insufficient, unsatisfactory system. That is anatta. But one thing was, people, we try to, in a bigger scale, pull it into the another way of looking at it. This is the practical way of looking at it, is nothing is controllable. It is always oppressed by the state of change, and the only thing that is constant is the state of change, impermanence. But one thing is, we are also clinging onto a concept. Not only materiality, concept is a part of the mentality, of course, but we are clinging to the concept idea. But the most prevalent concept or idea is that I exist, you exist, we exist. My spirit exists, my soul exists. This spirit or soul is eternal, undestructible, indestructible. That is the concept we all hold. And all of the great religions in the world hold that view. Or a few people, it doesn't exist, just a coincidence, just one life, one existence. Nothing beyond that and nothing after this. That's another view. That's a minority. Yeah. Can't say now they might be majority. But regardless, this concept or idea of soul or spirit is very prevalent and very pronounced. And that can take totally away from the actually what is happening in the realms of cause and effect. Because of that, it is most popularly known as anatta, is no soul, non-self. But also you can say it is uncontrollable. As long as there's a self, a soul. What is a self? Self is always a consolidation, solidification, always trying to be in a state of control. What is self? What is I? Ego, control, control, ego, that is it. In a small little way or in a big way. Of course, various intensity and degree. Control, 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 control. Ego, ego, self, I, my. That's why anatta is also interpreted as uncontrollability, lack of control. So those are the three things, anicca, dukkha, and anatta, the general characteristics. These general characteristics are constant, persistent, and true to all mind and matter and all living beings. That's are the three characteristics. And in here, when you understand that, when that what a self or a soul or I or you or me or us are, nothing but anicca, dukkha, and anatta, that is the moment that ignorance, that moha, not understanding. What not understanding? Not understanding the mind and matter as it really is, disappear. And that state is called understanding, insight, or wisdom. Loosely called, people call it enlightenment. In other words, you understand the true nature of mind and matter. That is understanding. When you understand it, you have abandoned the ignorance. Ignorance is gone. Like a dark room, you switch on the light. As soon as the light comes, the darkness is gone. Just like that, ignorance is gone, and then suddenly this insight comes in, this understanding, this wisdom comes in. Not only intellectual understanding, it is experiential acceptance, experiential understanding. In other words, it's part of your being. My being is this process and phenomenon and operation. Because you have understood now specific level and also general level. When that ignorance is gone, automatically that craving, grasping, attachment is gone. What do you crave for? What do you grasp? What do you attach? You crave and grasp and attach for these forms. Beautiful, ugly, nice, little, big, small, all the forms, all the sounds, all the sights, all the smell, all the touch, all the taste. That's what you crave for. That's what you become clinging to. That's what you become attached to. But now you understand all these things that you are craving, grasping, and attaching are nothing but constant states of change, nothing you can hold on, nothing you can control. As soon as you understand that, you don't put any attachment, any craving to these mind and matter. And as soon as you abandon that craving, the suffering ceases to exist because you have eliminated that cause. And when suffering ceases to exist, that is Nibbana. As such, we should have clarity and understanding what Nibbana is. It is beyond space and time. It's beyond the realms of the senses. It is beyond the realms of concept. And it is the extinction of craving, extinction of mind and matter, extinction of the five aggregates. May all of you be able to understand the five aggregates as it really is. The five aggregates is the dukkha, suffering, the first noble truth. And may you be able to abandon the craving and attachment towards this first noble truth. and attain the cessation of suffering as soon as possible. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Buddham bhujemi, dhammam bhujemi, sangham bhujemi.